Peter, do you know when we just start talking into the microphone before the opening music, that's called the cold open?
I do.
Of course you do, because you went to film school.
It has nothing to do with that.
Is it because you work at a radio station?
It's not even that.
How do you know?
I don't know. I just do. It's just in the collective unconscious.
It's not. You know things. No, you know things about production.
I don't.
You know things about radio. You know things about television, film, streaming media of all types.
See, this is exactly why I needed a break. This is why we came up with the Summer Rewind series. I don't want these conversations all the time with you. Not all the time. We got to let it breathe, man.
Peter, I know secretly, even though we recorded this open weeks ago, you are somewhere deep in a wooded forest with Wes Finnemore of Matilda Sandwich Shop, putting in your hours on the trail, getting ready for Mount Ascutney, Vermont 50K, and you're listening to my voice right now, and you're probably throwing your device into the woods and stomping on your headphones. Do you think that's true?
It absolutely already happened.
So you couldn't even hear your response because you've destroyed your iPod.
Most likely this episode, I want to say, is right around the time that I've been down in the Cape for my annual pilgrimage to the shore to get some sun and fun and play a little mini golf. And I might see that Dave Avakian, give him a bear hug.
Yes, you're probably on vacation down at the Cape, the lovely Cape Cod. And this episode features Dan Fitzgerald of Heartbreak Hill Running Company.
Oh, talk about friend of the show.
Big time friend of the show.
Yes.
Where we were introduced to his indoor running studio.
You mean the Heartbreak Hill Running Company studio over in beautiful Cambridge, Massachusetts?
The amazing treadmills they have there, the great classes that they train people to be faster on.
Right.
The great store.
Terrific store.
And the host of two HWIRT events.
Yes, but this interview took place before the events.
Before all of that
happened.
This
is sort of the origin story.
It was really the first time we met Dan.
Yeah.
And we were pretty blown away.
He was very charitable.
He's a serious guy.
He's a very serious guy.
And a fun guy.
He's a businessman.
He explains that pretty thoroughly.
Fitness is his business.
And, as if his bag isn't full enough,
yeah,
he's a surfer.
Yeah, he is.
And we get into that a little bit in the show.
We get into that a little bit. It's a great interview, and hello, Dan. I hope you're well, and I hope you enjoy listening to yourself again.
Who wouldn't?
Who wouldn't?
Let's end the cold open.
Ugh, it's weird when you say it.
Why don't I play some hot music?
No. This is, again, it's why we need a break, Brian.
Enjoy. Peter, my friend, good morning.
Good morning, Brian. Let's cut to the chase. How are you? How was your run today?
My run was stellar. What do you have on tap for today?
I am going to the doctor for yet another follow-up on my Achilles tendonitis, so I have to make this quick.
All right. We'll get you right out of here as soon as we can. Is it a big follow-up? Is there a lot of manipulation and procedures happening?
No, I believe my doctor has a tender hand and everything will be fine. This is the second follow-up from the initial go-to and diagnosis. I believe it will be uneventful, hopefully good news, I hope.
Peter, I can regale you with a very quick story.
I really have to go.
When I had my ACL surgery on my second doctor's follow-up,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
I thought exactly the same thing. And I was just in the office and he was looking at my knee and he frowned and said, looks a little puffy. He opened a drawer. Yeah. And removed a needle about the length of my arm.
Okay, no.
It really looked like someone had taken a wire coat hanger and completely extended it out to its furthest reaches.
What are you telling? I don't
get it. And then he drained my knee there in the office, and it was an event that I would not like to repeat.
Okay, my injury has nothing to do with my knee or fluid or any of that. I don't want to think about that. I'm fine.
Peter, we have a guest for today's show.
Yes, we do.
It's very exciting.
Yes, we do.
We went on location for this.
I love when we go on location.
I know, it is fun, isn't it?
It's fun.
So we interviewed Dan Fitzgerald, who is the owner of Heartbreak Hill Running Company, which, among other things, is three running stores. The original one in Boston's South End.
Right.
The second store is at the base of Heartbreak Hill. If you've ever run or trained for the Boston Marathon on Heartbreak Hill, you have run past it.
You've seen the gorilla.
In Newton, that's right. You've probably hugged or high-fived the gorilla on your way through. And the newest one is on Massachusetts Avenue, snugly between Kendall and Central Squares.
It's right across from the Miracle of Science bar and restaurant. Not that I frequent it, but it's in a brand new building. It's gorgeous.
But this is an interesting store because it's not just a running store. It's a running studio with two rows of treadmills. What did you think of those treadmills?
Well, it's deceptive. You walk into the store, and the store itself is not very big, but it's extremely beautiful in the way it's laid out. But then you go through the sort of two-way glass almost, and there you are in this studio space with 20 treadmills of the nicest quality. We go into that a little bit in the interview. I thought the whole space was phenomenal, and if you're hearing this and you don't know what we're talking about, get on over to the Heartbreak Hill Running Company and Run Studio on Mass Ave in Cambridge. It's unbelievable.
Dan's also a coach, and he's coaching up to 500 people to run the Boston Marathon.
Yeah, he is one of the premier coaches for a lot of the charity teams. You're going to hear him name a few of them in this interview, and it's phenomenal. He has so many people following him and doing very well under him.
So I think we should get right to it.
I agree with you.
So we began the interview by asking Dan if this was a natural line, moving from a single running store to a store at the base of Heartbreak Hill, to coaching running clubs that were based in the store, to now having this state-of-the-art treadmill studio.
It was a pretty natural line. I mean, the challenge in leading different running groups all the time, different abilities, and trying to scale workouts for different abilities is the fact that everyone's a different ability, and trying to get people that are very fast to have a hard workout, and trying to get people that are slower to also have an equally challenging workout, and empower them with the tools to really dig within themselves. Because if you're pulled too fast, you don't necessarily, you'll get discouraged early and you won't be able to really get the most out of the workout. So the natural environment for us was to get some powerful treadmills in a room where everyone gets the same rest. You can't fall behind, you can't get lost,
right?
And you can be coached through every single second of the workout at a high level in a completely controlled environment.
So one of the beauties is that the same coach can coach one runner who's running 6 miles in the time period, and another runner's running 3.5 miles just because of different speeds, but they can be together with one coach.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So a lot of the workouts I do are scaled by time. You know, if we do hill repeats, they're by time, so that if you're faster, you get further up the hill. If you're not, you don't get quite as far up the hill, and then we can start together. But here, we can emulate that and have people all just experiencing the same exact kind of pain. They can dig the same way. They can really receive all the coaching cues, even on a track, which is a pretty intimate environment as a coach sometimes. You know, you're only 400 meters from safety. The coach is right there every single lap. You're still away from that coach for, you know, 390 meters, mm-hmm. you know. So here you're really, it's an intimate coaching experience. So I'm really excited to be able to bring this to runners. So far, we've had a lot of, I guess you could say, non-group fitness type people. You know, as a fitness studio now, you could call it that if you like, mm-hmm. But I really consider it a runner's studio. We've had people that are pure runners from outside on the roads come in and experience what we're doing here and really come out surprised at how much they loved it. Because as you guys know, running on a treadmill, as we were talking about before, is just such a grind. You know, when I was training for Boston and I was running on the treadmill, I would just say, okay, that's 3 minutes. How am I supposed to run 26 miles? Even after my weekend 20 miler, I'd be like, I don't know if I can do this. This is 3 minutes. Okay, now we're at 3.5 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm a little closer now. Four minutes and 15 seconds. Okay, I can keep going.
And then you think, hey, if I hit this speed all the way up to the top, maybe it'll go by faster.
I would take my coat sometimes and just hang it over the front.
Right.
Just, I can't see this data. Stop showing me the minutes. Stop showing. I don't want to see it because it's a very unique form of torture.
Right. And here it really eliminates that. You're not staring at the treadmill as much. You know, you're really just thinking about what the coach is telling you to think about. And
yeah,
you have the music and the lights and a really manipulated experience to make you better and pull you out of that treadmill dirge. So they're treadmills, but it's definitely different than running on a treadmill in terms of the experience that you have here.
So you're not going to open this up just for people to come in and run. This is for coached sessions on treadmills.
If you're a monthly member, then we'll have open treadmill time. Okay. But that's a limited use,
right.
for generally it's a coached session. So it's I consider it almost like a hybrid between personal coaching, mm-hmm. and a group run. So because you have that intimate experience with the coach. So we have four different class styles that are interspersed throughout the week, you know, all different times of day, you know, morning, lunch, mm-hmm. And evening. And they're all that's the model, is you buy per class. If you need a speed workout, if you need a midweek long run, a weekend long run, or something that's more powerful, that's, you know, you're sitting next to the kettlebell rack there, something that sort of addresses the weaknesses that a lot of runners don't address on their own. They mm-hmm. think just, you know, running a 4 mile run every day is going to make them faster, and it's absolutely not going to. So this is a space where we can empower runners with the tools that they don't get on their own.
Mm-hmm. For the benefit of our listeners, so when I had a misconception about what this place would look like, Brian, I know you had come here for a class, but I was expecting a row of treadmills and then maybe one treadmill facing that mm-hmm. row of treadmills. That's where the leader would be and run a class, kind of like a spin class. But no, it's two rows of 10 treadmills. Mm-hmm. And Dan, you were saying when I first got here, the coach does not go on the treadmill.
I come from a pure coaching and coach-athlete sort of relationship and understanding of the world. So when I think about coaches, I think about, you know, Michael Jordan and Phil Jackson. You know, Jordan never handed it off to Phil Jackson. It's he was on the sideline coaching, making sure that the athletes were directed and getting the most. And the same thing, you know, Pre and Bowerman. You know, the relationship mm-hmm. between a coach and an athlete is it's directing. It's, and you know, it's all about the athlete. It's yep. not about the coach and being a fitness star. It's about getting the most out of the people, out of the athletes. And
although
the
I would love to see Phil Jackson take one.
Yep. That's right.
And go for a three. I would love to see him.
I want to just take a moment and talk about the physical treadmills mm-hmm. themselves. They're Woodway treadmills. I'd never been on anything like this before when I came into this class. It's the design is it has a very wide tread, and they're rubbery and almost like tank treads. There's traction to them, unlike mm-hmm. most treadmills that you use in a gym. And running on them, it's like running on a really high quality track. It's totally absorbing. You don't feel it in your knees or your hips like you sometimes do on a hotel or even a high quality gym treadmill. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us about these?
Yeah.
And how you selected them?
Yeah, absolutely. So Woodway is just it's well known to be one of the best treadmill producers in the world, and I find exactly what you're describing there. When I think a hotel is the best experience I can mm-hmm. think of a bad treadmill. You know, it's always the neglected fitness room. They're always the worst. And what is accentuated in that environment, I find, is just the belt sliding over the deck in the wrong direction. Oh. You know, and that's just the worst feeling. You might
get
it a little
bit. You
gotta
plug them in.
Yeah. But here, you know, with that tread, as you're describing, I think that is the best way to describe it. It's almost like a tank tread, and there are bearings on
gorgeous.
Either side, and they just slide. So it's not a belt on a deck. The actual treads are spinning through. So mm-hmm. there's none of that inefficiency when, you know, even if you're running poorly on it, the mm-hmm. treadmill's going to feel really smooth and forgiving, I think, which is a nice thing for runners that are out on the roads.
Yeah, I could just focus on my running and trying to do what my coach was telling me to do and looking around the class and saying, oh, everybody else here is very fast.
Well, they're going
and I'm really sweating a lot.
I also was impressed by the top control panel, which is unlike so many treadmills and gyms that have, you know, an espresso machine on it, right. TV, satellite, and CB radio.
But right. Instead, come on, break.
Instead, it really just has the go up, the go faster, the go slower, the elevation lift,
mm-hmm.
emergency stop, and that's about. And it shows you some information, but
right,
it's very clean.
It's very limited. I mean, I like things to be very pure and just be at the sort of the root of what the experience is. And you don't really need much more than speed and incline in here. You know, like we don't really want you to catch up on the voice or anything else that you may have missed on television last night. We want you to be engaged in what's happening in the studio and what the coach is telling you to do. So it's all pretty minimal for a reason.
And behind, on the other side of a glass wall from the studio, is a running store.
Mm-hmm.
We have a wall of sneakers and some gear and a fair amount of clothing. What is your concept behind what your running stores are? And especially compared to, because obviously you can go buy sneakers at a superstore mm-hmm. or lots of other places, but this is a unique vibe when you come in here. You know you're in a store for runners.
Right. For me, it's number one, it's a store for runners, absolutely. And we do the video gate analysis and all of the things that make up the specialty run retail channel. But my goal and our stores and everything we do is to create a brand. So it's all unified under the heart, under our logo, under Heartbreak Hill. So I want it to feel unique and cool. You know, I worked in the surf industry for a long time. First ran track, worked at a running store, then went into the surf industry and then came out. So I worked in surf skate shops as a wholesale vendor representative, and that experience really influenced sort of the retail side for me, and just sort of expecting something different, expecting something that felt really cool and intimate and like you were part of something cool just by walking in the store. So that's what I try to express in the retail element, create something special for runners. You know, like if you're a runner, you get it. You don't have to ask, you know, what is this place? You know, it's just like, wow, I feel welcomed here, and it's a unique presentation of what I like.
It's a great use of space. You managed to get a wide variety of product. I was able to check out all areas of it and then sit down for a second to check out some of the shoes. And what I really appreciated was you actually give space for people to sit mm-hmm. and try the shoes on. Whereas a lot of places, it's you can't even swing your knees over and try to get something. But it's not a very big space.
No. Yeah, and I feel like anything, you know, if it's too cluttered, you don't get the experience. You know, if you're in a museum, you know, it's not like it's just art everywhere. There's a reason why there's empty space around the paintings, and that's why there's empty space and vacancies around the footwear. It's why I don't use vendor POP. That's, you know, just the jargon term for signs that say Saucony, Brooks, yeah, right. 6, Nike. Oh, you don't see any of that here, because my brand is primary here, and I want to present a clean vision of what I think is the best shopping experience for a runner.
And something you said really struck me, because you're right. When you walk into a surf shop, and I used to go into surf shops all the time. I've never surfed in my life. They're just cool places to be.
Exactly.
And the people that work there always have, you know, a laid-back vibe. Obviously, mm-hmm. that goes along with surf culture. But just the clothing was cool. The vibe was cool. The magazines were cool that would be sitting on the coffee table. Mm-hmm. And skate shops the same way. You're not going to mistake being somewhere else when you come into a skate shop. So,
right.
I think that you've really achieved that here. This is a single purpose store mm-hmm. That a runner can come in and feel comfortable with.
Yeah,
that's
and
great.
To your point, as a non-surfer shopping in a surf shop, you know, people say, "Oh, I'm not a runner. Can I shop there?" I say, "Well, we have hats and t-shirts for drinking beer too. You know, you right. can." It's also commerce, and I want it to be, you know, something that you can, that just has something cool you can buy if you walk in for whatever reason.
You can't be nude all the time, and I've tried it. And you have to. Do you know what I mean? You have to put on a shirt.
And as Peter and I found out, sometimes when you start something, it starts to take over your life.
Yeah, I could
like
see that.
Running.
I could see that. Yeah, it has a weird way of doing that. No, it looks great. And
Thank you.
The thing about the shoes, the way the shoes are displayed, like you're saying, like you have no signage,
mm-hmm.
and you really have to look at the shoes. You have to like mm-hmm. experience the shoes, and you can pick them up, you can touch them, and mm-hmm. and yeah, I can tell where the Nikes are and all that, but. It's different. It's a different way of approaching mm-hmm. a product, as opposed to, oh, this is the section for me because I'm always a New Balance person, or I'm always an
right.
Adidas person, or whatever.
Right. Yeah, we like to remove that. You know, I try to feature shoes that I think look cool in the center, but then from there, it radiates out per gender, from neutral shoes to the maximum support shoes in the top right and top left corners. So there is actually you know, some categorization going on there
that
we talk about when a customer is purchasing shoes, but we don't sort of clue them in on that when they walk in. You know,
I only noticed it because I was looking for the Brooks Beast, because I'm wearing some Brooks Addictions, because I've just switched over to more stable shoes,
right?
Because I was overpronating, and that's what led to my issue, and mm-hmm. that's why I'm in recovery, Brian. Physical recovery.
it's a long road to health.
It's
Peter.
So long. It's so
physical and mental and emotional.
I'm getting
health.
There. Just help me.
I hope you do get there.
But this is why I was drawn immediately to the upper corner from this perspective. It's the upper left-hand corner, but from the store perspective, upper right-hand corner.
Mm-hmm.
And so then as you're saying that's sort of the stabilizing area, I'm noticing, oh, yeah, oh, right. Oh, there's the other one.
Right, so the other shoes nearby below it would also potentially work for you.
No, it's great. Dan, I was going to ask you, so when you think of yourself, do you think of yourself as a runner first, businessman second, entrepreneur third? Like, where do you go with it
Coach.
Inside your mind?
At this point, businessman for sure. It's not even close.
That comes number one.
Absolutely.
Got to pay the bills.
This is a business. You know,
it's business
it's
first,
designed the way it is to be.
And when did that switch happen?
When I opened it, you know, it's you know, in 2009, you know, to be precise. I mean, running for me, it's always a part of who I am, but it's more personal. You know, it's as much as you know, my experience as a runner isn't my experience in the stores, because here, like I said, I'm a coach. You know, I don't people always want to talk about my running, and
we don't ever want to talk about it. That's not what we want to do.
Or, you know, I get that question a lot. What are you training for? And I'm just, you know,
so you started in high school and then you captained. So tell us more about BC.
Right.
You know, that part of my life is, I do it every day, but it's, you know, it's not the most important thing to me anymore. I do a lot of hard workouts during my own workouts that I'm coaching sometimes. But definitely first business person, and really just figuring out ways to make the business better. And I think the most primary thing for me when I think about that is value, you know, providing value to my customers. And, you know, you can charge a lot for things, you can charge a little for things, and neither have anything to do with the value necessarily. It has to be, I think, worth what you're paying for, or in your customer's favor, is always my goal. So, you know, that's sort of the initial framework for what I do.
When you were thinking about where this store was going to exist and how it was going to exist, did you know Cambridge was your destination, or where were you looking?
That's a funny question. We were not looking here. The placement firm that the developer was working with came to us, and you know, over the years I liked drinking in Central Square and hanging out in Central Square, and I thought about maybe it'd be fun to have a business there because of that. You know, like 10 years ago, which is not a great idea for you know, opening a business.
Right. But note to self: don't go where
your favorite bar
my
is.
My favorite bar is
within walking distance of 15 bars and music venues.
That's not where we should open our podcast studio.
Okay, let's not do.
Let's not do that.
Well, hey, wait.
Oops.
Podcasting is not mutually exclusive.
Oh, we can do all that? That's
right. You can do all that. Yeah. But I mean, you guys have probably seen the transformation in this area over the past 10 years. So when we had sort of moved away from that silly idea 10 years ago to where this place is now, with Novartis World Headquarters, we're in the same building as Takeda. You know, Pfizer is over there. There's so many companies just in Kendall Square. It's a booming area. So we were really excited at the opportunity to create something new and special in a brand new building.
I had to take a graduate course just now to get my coffee at Flower Bakery.
It's a tough neighborhood.
Well, it's interesting in that Central and Kendall have merged, in that Kendall is now a little more cool than it ever used to be.
Absolutely.
And Central is a little more upscale than it ever used
absolutely.
To be.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But they still retain their own flavor, I would say. Mm-hmm. So the treadmill studio, you said, grew out of your running clubs and your runs that were based in the store. Was that part of community building, or was that something you had been doing before you even opened a store?
Yeah, I mean, people come to me all the time and say, oh, you know, you do such a great job with community. You know, what do you do? And for me, that wasn't really how it started. Mm-hmm. It started with the expectation that runners should expect more of themselves. Mm-hmm. that, you know, if you're training for a marathon, you should still run fast. You should still do a track workout. And just, I wanted to create something with our running club. It was always designed to make people faster. So we ran to the track for the first one. The very first run we ever did, I replicate on our birthday party every year. And it's just, we jog to the track. We do 3x200 meters. Mm-hmm. And a full series of drills, and then we jog home. You know, and that doesn't sound like a lot to people. 3x200, you know, that's a very easy workout. But I think if you don't do any speed, it's a really great introduction, and it's not intimidating. You can run fast. If you run an all-out 200, it hurts. Not that I want them to go all out. That's a different thing, but it can go 85%. Mm-hmm. But so everything I did was based on making the runners better. And people responded to that, and it created a community. And when people had a need for something more, you know, I would create something. You know, that's where the Heartbreakers came from. That's where a lot of the things that we created evolved from. But the point was to just make runners better. There were so many running clubs in the city that involved either running 4 miles or 6 miles, or running 4 miles and drinking beer, or, you know, there are all different variations of just running slow and together, you know. I thought it would be a little bit more interesting to make people better.
So your mission is to make runners faster?
Yes. Or better.
Or better.
More efficient, you know. It's speed, you know, speed can sound intimidating.
It's one of the metrics we use to measure whether we're a better runner or not.
Yes. Stronger core, there are all kinds of things that we can improve. But always those things.
Well, that's an interesting question, because as a heavier set runner, I actually judge myself on, like, well, can I do this next 5 or 10K or half? 2 minutes faster than the one I did 6 months ago or mm-hmm. a year ago. But is it really more of a question of, can I finish this 10K or half marathon and feel better doing it? Is that a better mark?
It can be. You know, to me, the targets are always shifting.
Yeah.
You know, it's always,
it's very,
it depends.
Individual too.
Right. It depends where you are now, you know, when, what your goals are. If it's to feel better when you're finished and run the same time, then that's an improvement. You know, if you're not puking at the end, that's, then you ran the same time. That's an improvement, right?
Okay. So note to self, regurgitation bad, Brian.
If your goal is to not regurgitate, then it just depends on your goal.
It's just data.
It's just data. It just goes in the chart.
That kind of data collection gets messy, but
right.
But you know, it's always we take into consideration the runner's goals and move from there. Generally, faster is the main one. And a lot of people, when the, you know, when somebody comes to me and says, you know, what do you think? Do you think I could run this time? And they tell me a time. The marathon, they did no speed and they want to run 5 minutes faster.
Right.
I just kind of giggle to myself and say, oh, we'll see.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot you didn't do.
If you do 12 or 16 weeks and you take speed very seriously within those workouts, what could an average runner see in terms of a change of time?
I never answer that kind of question.
Excellent. It was a trick question. I was going to leave if you answered it. I was going to leave.
It depends on, that's because it's so personal.
Because
there are so,
so
many things. I mean, there are many athletes that I coach personally or over the years that I've coached personally, and there are plenty of workouts in that lead up and time frame in a block that aren't done, you know? So if you say that, that's one thing, but what does one actually do? And, you know, working within the lifestyle that, that a runner is going to actually live and the workouts are actually going to execute are what I have to work with, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why it's really hard to answer questions like that.
I think for novice runners, and the only reason why I speak for them is because I am one, they're so focused. If they're going for a half marathon or for a marathon goal, they're so focused on, oh, I just got to get my miles in per week. And then that long run per week. They don't really think about or put in, I think two things get missed. Speed work is one. And the other one is real weight workout, like core workout. Do you agree with that? Absolutely.
I mean, it's your long runs are easier when you run a little faster. You know, if you're, you know, you build efficiency when you do hill workouts, you know, repeats are just the most basic thing in running. It's like in any other sport, you have to work all elements. You know, you can't just, you can't be a great golfer and just putt. And I don't even like golf. I don't know why that's the first one that popped into my head, but, you know, you can't just work on foul shots and be a great basketball player. You know, you'll be good when you get hacked, but you're not going to be good at anything else. It's the same thing with running. You might be good at running. You're going to get good at running slowly if you just run your long run and run easy.
I'm really good at it. Yeah. I am. Aren't I really good at running slow?
And you've heard this a million times, for any first-time half marathoner or marathoner or distance runner at all, their biggest concern is finishing and whether or not they can actually do the miles. And they know they're never going to run 26 consecutive miles prior to that first marathon. And once you've done it once, you start to see the wisdom of the other workouts, knowing that you can accomplish it. But how do you go about convincing that first-timer that hills and speed workouts and weights are going to get them there?
It's a lot of trust, you know, a lot of the athlete trust me going in. I think that helps a lot, obviously. And it's really just speaking to them logically, I think, and appealing to the fact that just trying to be informative. It's the same way we sell shoes. We try to provide you with a whole bunch of information and let you make the decision, you know. And as it relates to the marathon, I always say to people, it's way harder to run your first mile ever than it is to go from a half marathon to a marathon. I know it sounds like a big deal, but running 13 miles is a long way. Just slowing down a little bit and continuing to go, it's really not that big a deal. I know it hurts, but it's just a series of things you need to do. You can't just go do it. But if you have 20 weeks of preparation, you can definitely do it. And then explaining to people that the week that you run the marathon is going to be a very easy week. And the week that you run your longest 20 mile or 22, or if you're running only 16, whatever that week is in the midst of your training, the meat of it is going to be way harder than the week you run 26. So getting them to understand that, and then just relaying stories of other success, you know, successes of other runners of all different abilities, really helps them. I mean, when I think about running, I don't think about my own personal limits. You know, if I see somebody do something, it, to me, if it's an Olympian or whatever. I know I can't exactly do that, but it just sort of sets the benchmark of what is possible. I don't look at it as impossible. They're not proving what's impossible. They just did it.
Right.
You know, they're showing you what people can actually do. And when I think about marathoners, I say, you've seen the marathon, right? You've seen all the people running by. You know what they look like. They look just like you. They look just like us. There's every kind of body in that race. So if they can do it, you can do it. There's no reason why anyone can't run a marathon. I firmly believe that.
I'm living proof of that.
That's true.
I really am.
So am I. We all are. It's just a run. Yeah, it's just a run.
Dan, do you also cross-train in other areas? I know for a lot of runners, yoga is big, and I was curious about that.
Yeah, so full disclosure, my wife is a Runner's World Yoga expert. She's the creator of the Runner's World Yoga Center.
What?
And she's an author in that space.
It's Om Gal, everybody,
Om Gal,
if you're listening.
Omgal,
we'll put links
on social
in the notes.
Media. Rebecca
All
Pacheco
the links will be in the notes.
Is her name, and she definitely influenced me with yoga. You know, probably partly courtship got me into yoga. What I learned in that experience was how beneficial it is to my running. You know, I was always a diligent stretcher. I did active stretching, rope stretching, all of those things throughout my running career. But yoga, I just found the day after a long run was so helpful in terms of resetting my posture, reworking. My right hip is always sore. It's always on fire after a long run. And it would just really reset my body, and doing it every week, I really saw flexibility benefits and all those things that really help. And core strength, when you start yoga and you just hold your arms up, you know, and I'm someone who hits the gym 3 days a week, always, you know, for 10 years and probably more, 19, too many. And then you're in a room with all of these very thin, flexible people, and I'm thinking, okay, like, we'll just stand and hold our arms up. And then you're like, okay, I'm shaking. Is everyone else going to collapse? Why am I having such a hard time? And you really get to learn about your body in that context. And I think as a runner, learning that skill of concentration through pain and then just the benefits, the actual benefits in the small core strength muscles, posture at the beginning of the marathon and the end of the marathon can vary, you know, and you really want to do all the things you can to make sure it stays the same, that you're getting the same power and drive out of your legs through your posture, through your core strength. And I find yoga to be one really powerful tool. And then it just informed my stretching for after a run, you know, just say, okay, now I know how to address this hip issue more directly and in a more effective way. So I think it's hugely beneficial.
I completely agree with you in terms of the physical benefits, especially long, slow stretching, a lot of floor work and hip opening and hamstrings, especially for runners. But you mentioned something that I think is really complementary in terms of running and yoga, which is checking in and resetting as you're doing the activity. You certainly have to do it while if you're in a uncomfortable posture for a very long time. But when you're running, it's so beneficial to check in, reset, say, am I leaning forward? Am I leaning back? Is my head up? Is my head down? What's my cadence look like? And of course, that's different for somebody who's running a sub 5.5 or someone who's running a 9.5, but it's the same procedure. And it's just as necessary.
Yeah, I would say it's not that different. You know, if your limit is 9:30 or your limit is 5:30, it's just your limit. You know it. You know, it's you know it as what it is, and that's what you know. You know, that's something I try to speak to my runners about. It's just, you know, if your fastest mile is a 10:30 and, you know, someone else's fastest mile is a 4:30, it's your fastest mile. I think as it relates to yoga, just that body awareness and because of the precise cueing of yoga, you just get to learn your body a little bit more. And it does, I think, really help with those check-in elements. You know, how is my posture right now? Are my shoulders back and relaxed? Is my face relaxed? You know, all those things that really help you run stronger, faster.
Tim, I'll just ask you one race question.
Oh, you weren't going to do it.
Have you done an ultramarathon?
I have not done an ultramarathon.
I'm going to ask you one question.
We can talk about my running. It's okay.
Would you run an ultra marathon?
I would never run an ultra marathon, I don't think.
See, that's a better answer than what he
That's interesting
see?
Because you were saying that anybody could run a marathon, or anybody who can run a marathon, but you have a self-imposed limit?
I have a self-imposed desire.
Yeah.
So I guess as an 800-meter runner, which is like the most pointless distance.
Nothing's 800 meters.
Yeah, everyone's like, what is it? So what does that mean? You know, 2 laps around the track. So you know.
Coffee shop's not even 800 meters away. That's weird. Why would I do that?
You know, and working in a running store after I had graduated college, and you know, working with runners for a long time before I ran a marathon myself in the stores, and saying, oh, you know, I want to buy shoes. You know, they think I look fast and they're excited to talk to me. And then they'll say, oh, have you ever run a marathon? And then you'll see their shoulders deflate, their posture change. And when I say no. Oh.
Right. Especially in Boston.
Yes. Yes. And I want to say, I know how to run. You know, I ran 65 miles a week and a lot of it quite fast around the 800 meters.
For a half mile race, he ran 65 miles a week.
You got to shoot a lot of film to get the shot you want.
That's right.
Right.
That's
a good
exactly
ratio.
Right.
It's a good ratio.
That is a great analogy. So
I went for golf, but I couldn't come up with one.
For me, the ultra marathon is not a measure of my personal running excellence. You know, mm-hmm. it's not, and for me, it's also something that I'm learning is different, a difference between me and some people. I don't feel like it would challenge my limits not that it wouldn't challenge my limits. It's not something I think I couldn't do.
I think
it's something I know I choose not to do.
I think it's a different motive. It's a totally different motivation.
You could just go out. Mm-hmm. It's just about slowing down and going for a long time. And that's never been what interests me. I mean, I'm an 800 meter runner. It's like, offends me to my core.
Right, right.
I would just. I used to think the 1500 was too long and slow.
Right.
I wish I focused more on the 1500 now, since people know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
At least I could make the translation to the mile, so people know what that is.
Right.
Does that upset you now that you're sort of out of that competitive range, and people now think it's kind of, oh, it's a fashionable thing. It's kind of cool now. Does it? Is that awareness, or is it exciting because there are that many more people?
I mean, I whatever gets people running and motivated is great. I mean, there's a hard line between how I measure myself and how I coach athletes and how I motivate runners. So when you ask me personally, do I want to run an ultra marathon? Absolutely not. I'm a business person. I don't have time to run all day.
Right.
Back to the original question.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I like to make my workout super efficient, you know, mm-hmm. and that's always my goal, is helping people get more out of their running. Happy to coach toward an ultra marathon, but it doesn't interest me personally.
What's the best distance for you to run?
Whatever I have time for.
So it really is that schedule dependent. And
yeah. And I went for 10 last night. I like that. You know, I don't really measure myself too seriously with races anymore. You know, I feel mm-hmm. like I take that really seriously. I'm very competitive and I've transferred that into the business side.
Right.
So racing is just something I do with my team when there's a really big one that's going to be a fun thing. But I like, we have a team called the Young Guns within our Heartbreakers team, and they're sort of an elite development team. So I like kind of cheering them on and having them fly the flag for us. But like I said, I'm a coach now. It's not about me anymore. It's just getting a good workout in, making sure I run really fast once a week. I try to do that with my South End group every Thursday night at 6:30. So that is a group that I lead. I'm the coach, but I also do it. So, you know, that one, if you're looking for a super personalized experience, you know, you're not going to get that as much from me that night, but we run together and it's hard and it's fun.
What's your route? Where do you go?
We either go to Boston Common, or we go to the track in the Fens, or Madison Park track in Roxbury. So one of three venues, and it's always, you know, warm up, active stretch, speed work, drills, jog home, and then beers after. So,
ooh, I like that last part.
All equally important.
What's the oldest member of the Heartbreakers that have come to you?
The current oldest member is probably 52.
Does it skew younger?
It skews younger. I mean, it's definitely like a 25 to 45 mm-hmm. urban. You know, I mean, that's kind of our business model. So,
yeah,
you know,
right.
It's right in that 25 to 45. A lot of, you know, mid 20s, early 30s, late 30s. Early 40s as I get there.
And seeing as it's almost October
mm-hmm.
and the Boston Marathon training schedule begins, you said you have something like 500 people you're going to be coaching few months?
Yeah, so I coach the Mass General Marathon team, the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, the Red Cross, Joslin Diabetes Center, Cycle Kids, Celtics Shamrock Foundation.
What, that's it?
And I'm missing a few others that I added. I apologize to those organizations for now.
That's a lot. That's a lot of
And
things.
We also have the Heartbreakers, which are qualifiers and people that run for other organizations that would prefer my coaching. So mm-hmm. it ends up being, last year was a little over 500.
Wow.
I kept updating my bio every week because I was creating the website, and I was like 475 plus. And I'm like, change it to 500 plus, change it to
That's great.
So it's a very busy period of answering a lot of emails, mm-hmm. but it's really so, you know, it's maddening some days, it's busy and crazy, but it's so satisfying, you know, when it comes to the day and comes to the experience, and just seeing people go from anxious and these silly questions. I've learned how to answer, like write an email that answers almost every question I'm going to get before it's asked. That's a really important part of of the job. And then seeing people go from nerves and not thinking they can do it to then, you know, there's one woman I remember 2 years ago who was super nervous about running the marathon. And, you know, I did a clinic after the longest long run, and we were just jogging together after the workout on Heartbreak Hill. And this was after she ran her 20 miler. And I just looked over at her and said, did you ever imagine, you know, 4 months ago or 3 months ago, you'd be just jogging with me down Heartbreak Hill after your 20 miler, you know, like 3 days later. And she's like, you know, no, I didn't, you know. So it's so cool to see people make that transformation and really understand and believe in themselves. I think it's really such a unique personal growth thing for people of all ages, you know, that haven't done it before. So it's really a special thing to be a part of that and help guide that. So it's a good time of year.
Where do you like to stand on Marathon Monday?
Well, at my store, of course.
Right at the base of Heartbreak Hill.
Heartbreak Hill Running Company, at the corner of Common Center Street.
Open 7 days a week.
Yeah, 7 days a week, 10 to... but absolutely, that's... I mean, it's for me, that was my marker when I ran it. It's mile 20 on the marathon course. And, you know, people talk about how that's really the halfway point of the marathon. And in terms of psychological barriers, you know, you get to 20 and it's hard. And especially right
there's another 20 in front of you.
It's actually, in my experience, it's actually the last time you're conscious until about the last 100 feet of the race.
Yeah. That was really where I lost the ability to distinguish people's faces. I saw like just thumbs sticking out of shirt holes,
and I said, "Stop yelling! It's just so much."
Why
yelling.
Is everybody yelling? Stop! Why do you keep saying my name?
Yeah, that was the scream tunnel for me. I was like, you know, in Wellesley or the kissing tunnel, whatever. I was just like, people are streaming over to go,
don't
get a kiss, and I was like, get out of my way. And this is so loud here. I wanted to get out of there so fast. Very loud.
By the time Peter and I got to the scream tunnel, they were already at their next class.
Yeah, they'd gone.
It was
out.
Tuesday morning, and they had stuff to do.
Yeah, the get back to work tunnel. Because everything's about me, and mm-hmm. I see everything through an injury lens right now.
Uh-huh.
Have you suffered any kind of injuries? And what's the longest amount of time you had to take out from running?
I have had Achilles tendonitis. I've had light foot tendonitis, but really, that's about it. I think
that's good.
My hockey career was cut short when I broke both wrists in kindergarten, first grade, so I didn't learn to skate very well. So that was a traumatic injury and turned me into a running coach.
Dan, you put the skates on your feet, not your hands.
That was
the first mistake.
That might have been it.
Yeah. So, no, I've been fortunate that it's just been Achilles tendonitis. And then I try to make sure that my training is dynamic, that it's fast, it's long, it's short, it's... Yeah. Strength, it's flexibility. You know, I really try to practice what I preach just to make sure that I can run hard when I want, you know. Yeah. And so I've been fortunate that way. I think just years and years and years of making sure I do drills every single Thursday. You know, it's been an embarrassingly long time since I haven't done a full series of drills on at least one day a week. So I think it pays off when you do all the little things. That's an important piece.
In terms of when you say drills, are you talking about weightlifting drills or speed drills?
Like lunges, mm-hmm. Carioca, all the like little form speed drills that will help with flexibility, strength, mm-hmm. break down elements of the run into like little bite-sized chunks for your body to learn and adapt to.
Do you still surf?
The business owner piece has gotten in the way of that significantly, but I used to work for Quiksilver for a long time, and working there wasn't as hard as owning a business, so I didn't miss a swell ever. Now I surf probably...
How many dawn patrols do you do in a given month?
Yeah. It's more like I probably get out five times a year now, unfortunately.
And where do you choose to go? If you're in this area, where do you like to
go? I learned to surf at York Beach, Maine.
Excellent.
So I still have a soft spot in my heart for that place. It's also very It's not tidal dependent, which is, you know, when time is of the essence. Of course, there's the time trade-off of having to drive all the way to Maine now, but the tide is not an issue there. So if I have time, I'd go up there.
Just a farmer's, you'd hop in, you'd be fine?
Yeah, you needed the whole deal. I have a full wetsuit quiver. I'm also a sales rep in the surf industry still for a company called Excel Wetsuits. They make the best winter gear there is. So hooded wetsuit, boots, gloves.
Kind of needed here almost all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
Almost.
If you're going to buy one wetsuit in New England and you really want to be committed to surfing.
You want a winter one.
It's a winter one. Yeah. Absolutely.
Peter, I'm going to say, I came down here to Heartbreak Hill Running Company's studio.
Over on Mass Ave here in Cambridge?
Yes. Walking distance from Kendall and Central Square.
Stone's throw.
A light jog.
Yeah.
If you will.
Yeah.
And I came for a class, and Dan, you've done something pretty cool, which is some of the coaches are not necessarily running coaches, but they're really leaders in the Boston area in terms of fitness and just activities that are happening in Boston, their community. Leaders for a really general term. For example, I came to a class and it was led by Chris Capozzi, who's one of the leaders of the November Project Boston group. And so obviously he's going to bring a certain type of energy and introduce this studio to people who are involved in doing November Project workouts. Who are some of the other people that you have coaching these treadmill classes?
So we have Amanda Nurse. She is a Olympic trials qualifier in the marathon and ran that race. She's a 240 marathoner and, again, community leader, has won tons of races here around Boston. We have Jarek Walker. He started the Nike Run Club, resurrected it in the Nike store in Boston's Back Bay. We have Sydney Baptista, who is a Nike Plus Run Club pacer. We have Kat O'Leary, who's been a longtime member of the Heartbreakers and my community here. I think really my goal with the studio and the reason why it's set up with me as chief heartbreaker, quote unquote, is I wanted to empower people who I believe can bring something special to the room with the tools to be the best coach that they can be. So I design all the programming and I hand it off to these personalities who I love and trust to create a space that is special and also has, you know, running excellence at its core. So those are the people I chose, and I felt very fortunate that they all said yes when I emailed them, because for me, I didn't want the normal cast of fitness instructor stars. I wanted people that haven't done this before, because it's unique. I wanted people to be sort of trained and vetted over through what I wanted and understand that, and then bring it to the people. So it's been such an awesome thing to see them do it and be so enthusiastic, you know, and really bring their A game to this place. You know, Chris was awesome. Amanda's been so great. The crew has just, each coach brings a different energy and they all execute the workouts well. And it feels really special when they're in here and they're doing their thing and the runners feel it. It's fun.
How can people sign up for classes if they're interested?
You can go to our website, heartbreakhillrunningcompany.com. A special URL that's, I don't know how many characters that is, but it is Heartbreak Hill Running Company, all spelled out, every single word.
Wow. not unlike how was your run today.
Yeah, we're familiar with that. It's all about branding.
Yeah, it's I like things that are called what they are.
Yeah, actually, yeah. No number 8 in it or something.
It's not, it's not spelled wrong. It's not cute that it's spelled wrong. It's actually what it is.
Before we let you go, because you have to go run a business, get a run in, go do some
a little yoga.
Everyone's been wanting to know. We've been getting live tweets, live emails, why we've been doing this live broadcast, which is not at all. Just made all that up.
Sounds good. Sounds impressive.
Quickly, before you go, Dan, the best beer for running.
The best beer for running is a Harpoon IPA, absolutely.
Wow, without hesitation. Look at that. And I did not give that to him in advance. He knew that that's the answer.
I'm a running coach. It's my job.
It's his job to know.
You ask him a serious question, and he gives you a serious
answer. That's what it is.
What else did you expect?
Any last minute advice for me in healing tendonitis, Achilles? What do I do next?
It's always the same. First, let me say I'm not a doctor. I'm a running coach. I coach healthy runners.
Well, to be clear, we are not medical doctors.
No one in
You're
this
also
room.
Not
no
doctors.
In this room
okay.
is not okay. a medical doctor.
No. Okay, so second, just always listen to your body. If it says do a little less, do a little less. Be thankful you did something.
All right.
Don't be afraid to test it, but always listen to it.
Excellent. Well, I like that.
Do less, Peter.
I'm gonna really, this whole marathon training season, I'm going to focus on doing less. This is going to be great. Dan, thank you very much. Dan Fitzgerald, ladies
Thanks
and
so
gentlemen.
Thanks so much, guys.
Oh, wait, I have one last question, Peter. There's a postscript.
We're almost out.
If you were going to run a marathon in northern Maine in December.
Oh, did you know?
What types of snowshoes would you bring?
Because I don't know if you know this or not.
For that final kick.
But Brian is running.
Where's the finish line? Which way to the finish line? You can't get there from here.
The Millinocket Maine Marathon.
I heard about this race.
You heard about that, yeah.
Yeah.
December 10th, everybody. December 10th.
I think the important thing about running in the snow is you can focus on your form. You just make sure your foot strike is right underneath your body.
Make sure
you don't
your snow
slip.
Angel
you
form
sure
is good.
Right. It's quick. The snowshoes will make it make that landing nice and soft.
Where you know the science of concussion and hypothermia.
Yeah, wear a helmet.
He has a winter wetsuit you could borrow to stay warm.
Dan will size me up for that winter wetsuit after that.
Will you come out and be in the stands with us in our live broadcast in Millinocket?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Everyone has said yes, Brian. That would be.
He does have Heartbreak Hill Running Company Millinocket to open there.
Oh, yeah, so. You could put a studio right there.
I'm looking for other urban centers. It's either going to be New York or Millinocket. I haven't decided.
Excellent. Excellent. Dan Fitzgerald, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. Well, that was impressive.
Oh, my gosh, so great. It was so great to be there and to see the store. And I got to say, you and I spent some money there because the stuff is that good.
We sure did. We couldn't help ourselves.
I bought myself a massage rolling bar thing that's phenomenal. I've been using it every night on my calves and on my tendons.
How is it working?
It works. It's great. There's a lot of stuff there.
And I did the whole thing where they put some shoes on me. I ran out on the sidewalk. They videotaped me. They showed me in very slow motion how my... ankle rolls and
so
we
good.
Fixed that with some sneakers and the artist in residence and I bought a bunch of clothes. It was great.
It was great. Hey!
This has been episode 46 of How Was Your Run Today with Peter Villa and Brian Gould. Music by Jeff Cronenberg. Anna Brooks is our social media guru. Andrea Bonnie Gould is our artist in residence. And many, many thank yous to our special guest, Heartbreak Hill Running Company's Dan Fitzgerald.
Join the show by recording a voice memo with your questions, musing, or rants, and emailing it to us, howwasyourruntoday@gmail.com. Listen to us every week wherever you collect podcasts. I keep mine next to the espresso machine on my hotel treadmill. But whenever you visit that special podcast place, please give us a rating and a comment. Every single one of those makes a difference in how this little here show is ranked.
And if you love HWYRT, please share our posts on social media. It's free and it's easier than running a full marathon in a wetsuit.
It's very hard to do.
For everything else, please check out our website at hwyrt.com. Hey, Peter.
Yes, sir.
I hope you make it out of your doctor's checkup unscathed.
Without needles. Special thanks to Anna Brooks. Huge shout out for finishing her first 10K. Wow.
Yay.
Sounds good. Look good, feel good.
Hot cross buns, hot cross buns. See how they run, see how they run. That's two different songs I combined. I combined them up. Hot 97. It's the morning zoo.
Hot roll. We just had that one. So you said hot roll. Hot roll, hot roll. You're on a hot roll.